Welcome to Jump Podcast. I'm your host, Traveling Jackie, and I'm here to explore travel, adventure, and lifestyle in ways meant to motivate you to move and experience the world outside your comfort zone and to do big, courageous things with your one life. Let this show be a source of advice and inspiration, and remember that in the end, it's you who takes the leap. This episode is supported by Osprey, my go-to luggage brand for everything since 2015, and by Oboz Footwear, my feet's ride-or-die adventure shoe brand. So stay tuned for more about my recent favorites from both of them. And of course, we're supported by Jump Adventures and our own collection of epic adventure itineraries to Patagonia and beyond. Let us send you on your dream adventure. You can find out more and browse trips at jumpadventures.com. Okay, here we go. I am back here with one of my favorites, actually, to invite on the podcast, the one and only Sherry Ott from Ott's World. You guys may have heard her name. You may have heard her voice multiple times on the show. I think you've been on like six times by now, Sherry. I don't know.
Yes, talking about various things.
But who's counting? But yeah, so welcome back. It's because you have so many, you know, neat things. You've always got different things going on and you're so knowledgeable and there's always cool stories about travel wherever Sherry is. And so welcome back to the show. We're excited to have you.
Well, thank you. I'm glad that you're that impressed with my travel resume. there's a lot of people impressive. Out there that travel. So it's thank you for having me.
It's true. But you, I do think that you are probably the most well-traveled person that I know, like at least well, you know, you have traveled so much. Wow. It's funny because you are looking at yourself like, well, this is just my life. This is just what I do. But you have been to a ridiculous amount of places and you just have never slowed down. You like hardly are home.
I know.
And when you are home, you're on a bike, which is what we're going to talk about today, because there is something we have that Sherry's been working on for years now that's not international. It's actually happening right here in our own country, in our own backyard. And it's a very big project. And I think it's really exciting. It has to do with biking. I already said that. And we're going to dig into that today. And so, yeah, I have followed your story a little bit on, well, actually quite a lot on this. And you have a video that you have started.
Yeah, it's a little docu-series that goes through it all. And that was kind of, I launched with that. But yeah, I'm really excited to talk about cycling because that's not something we have ever really talked about before. Because it's all very new to me.
And I think that that's very exciting. So let's start with, will you just give, for anybody who hasn't heard of you before and doesn't know your story, will you just give a little recap about who you are and what you do? And I mean, it'll make sense why you've been on the show six times by now once you're done with this part.
Sure. Okay, so we'll do the fast version. In 2006, I left my corporate job that I had been in for 14 years. And I took off to go spend 1 year, what I thought was going to be 1 year, traveling around the world. I had a little website that I called a journal because we didn't really have blogs. We didn't have social media really back then. We didn't have smartphones. So I took off and I did that year. I extended it to about 16 months, went to, I don't know, like 25 countries. I was not a well-traveled person prior to that. I had never done anything like that. I didn't even have a passport until I was 30. So it was all new to me, and I absolutely fell in love with it and the transformative power of travel and just being able to see the world in different perspectives like that. I don't think I understood how curious of a person I was and how much I needed that until I got out there and started experiencing it. So at that point, I stayed on the road. I decided I would sell everything and go back to being on the road. I taught some English in Vietnam and lived there for 1 year. And then really after that, so after 2009, I was all in on the blog and, because then we called it a blog, and I was all in on social media because it was just starting and it was really fun back then. And I had been traveling ever since. I spent the next 11 years completely nomadic, traveling all over the world, working as one of the, I suppose, original first, I don't know, few, I should say, content creators or influencers or whatever you want to call us, I guess. And I was kind of in the right place at the right time when all this kind of went nuts. And it's allowed me to have this whole career in travel doing, well, it used to be all blogging. Now it's really like a little bit of blogging and all content creation, and forming this community of people who followed me for 18 years, some of them. And then I got, I guess, 7 years ago, I decided to get a home base. Yeah, because being nomadic for 11 years is really hard on your own. And I decided to get a home base. So now I'm based in Denver. However, as you said, I'm barely home. I'm still always out traveling, doing media work. I'm running tours for small groups. And then I have this bicycle project. And all of that keeps me incredibly busy in the travel world.
Mm-hmm. That was a really, really well-worded work recap. Oh. You just squeezed, 18 years into a paragraph. Well done. It's hard to do that because we know that there's so many stories and adventures and changes and highs and lows and everything that goes into all of that. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
And I can relate on a lot of those levels. So, yeah.
Well, I think that's why we become friends, really.
Exactly.
I mean, like, we have a lot to be excited about together, as well as sometimes commiserate together.
Yeah,
it's so true.
I was just going to say, this is why I think we love like chatting like this so much, because we can just kind of get into our fun projects and share with each other and look back and look forward, and it's good times. So, yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for sharing that. And before we get any further, where can people find you? Because if they want to be like looking at photos or looking up some of these links and stuff, where can they go?
The easiest way is otsworld.com. I mean, so that is my website, the one that, and it was called Otsworld way back in 2006 when I started it. So that's remained the same. So either my blog and then all of my social media. So I mainly only do Instagram and Facebook. They're also at Otsworld. You can find me on YouTube, Otsworld. So
perfect.
I'm dialed in on the branding.
We'll make sure we put all of the links in the show notes too for you. But
thank you.
Of course. So let's talk about this bike quest thing. Let's start from the beginning too, because this story goes back further than you.
Well, it goes back to when I was 14 years old.
Okay. So let's start there.
Yeah, I was a teenager, and all of a sudden, my dad, who's an odd guy, decides he's going to start walking from capital to capital. This was 1984. So you know that I'm 55 now. So it was a long, long time ago. He just decided, and he was probably around 47 years old or so at that time. And he just decides he's going to start this project, this walking from capital to capital in the United States, in the lower 48 plus DC. So he had always planned on 49 capital routes. He wasn't really a walker before. He always had to be different. That's what I would say. That was the only thing that I could kind of figure out on what would drive him to do this. So he just announced it. My brother took him to Springfield, Illinois, dropped him off, and he started walking. And we were all just like, okay. I, of course, though, at 14 years old, was mortified because no one wants weird parents. You just want parents that are like all the other parents, really. And he definitely wasn't, for many, many reasons. And I knew that my whole teenage life or whatever. But that was kind of like the topping on the cake of like, you're what? And so that went on. And he recruited, well, not recruited, my mother, who is a very dutiful wife. They're still married. They're still alive. They're turning 89 this month. And my mother was there to help him accomplish this or do this. And she was in charge of logistics, basically. So she would drive him to wherever he needed to start walking, so at the beginning of the capital, let's say, And then he would walk, say, 25 miles or something that day. And she would find him because, remember, there were no phones.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Right. They would somehow meet up based on paper maps. And she would pick him up at the end of the day, and she would find like the hotel and everything in the meantime and, you know, get him settled in. And at times she would bring him lunch and refill his water in the middle of the day and so on. But she would also then take that time to go into the little towns and get a hotel, maybe have lunch, go to the library. I don't know. She would entertain herself somehow. She didn't follow him, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So when they had to meet up, they had to figure out how to meet each other. He designed a whole route to these 49 capitals based on, I guess, terrain in a way, and the not really the most efficient way. I mean, now it's so funny because we could plug this into ChatGPT and say, what is the most efficient way, best way, whatever, hardest way to walk from capital to capital in the lower 48? And it would probably give you, you could slice and dice this a billion different ways, but ChatGPT would just give you that answer. He had to kind of figure that out based on all these paper maps. So, and it was a paper map. In fact, we had a big paper map in our like entryway and little push pins, like the old tiny push pins. And we used yarn. He used yarn and would put in like, here's the routes that I've completed. Here's the ones that are left. Here's the ones that I'm in the middle of doing. This went on for probably 30 some years. The last time he walked on a capital route was 2009. Okay. Yeah. So he would have been in his 80s then, early 80s probably. So, or late 70s, I guess. So, yeah. So he did this for a very long time. And my mother always was the logistics person.
How many did he end up doing completely?
Yes. So he did 23
of the 49.
Yeah. So he had, and I'm going to say he had started 23. I think he had like 6 or 7 in progress that he never finished. So he had a full-time job. He didn't just go out for 4 years and do this like Forrest Gump. And by the way, this was before Forrest Gump. So it was really weird. So he had a full-time job. He was an engineer at Caterpillar, and he would do this on his vacation time or when we were going out to visit family somewhere or whenever he could. He would like tack on a few days of walking. And so that's why he had some in process. He would set up all the rules. He had to follow his route, but he could have multiple ones in progress at the same time.
Okay.
So that also means I was also drug all over until I finally went to college at 18 or 19 years old on these crazy trips. And I hated them. Hated it.
Because you were in the logistics car, right? So you just had to go. And did you ever walk with him?
I did once. I can't even remember where it was. I'd have to go back to my notes, to his notes. So he took meticulous notes this whole time, too. He would speak into a little recorder, tiny mini recorder. And then he would come back and transcribe all those notes. Once again, ChatGPT would have been really helpful then.
Right.
But yeah, he would record them all. And we had this old Commodore 64 computer. And then my mom would like type in all the notes. And so we have all of his notes. He had binders and binders of notes. But in like true engineering fashion, it's very technical. So it's like, I crossed this river at this time during the day, et cetera. It's not like stories necessarily.
Did you ever ask him why? What was his why?
I did not ask that question until I started taking on this project as an adult.
Okay.
So if we want to jump there, we absolutely can.
Okay. Well, do you want to wait? Will it be better to share that later?
No, that's fine. I mean, here's what then happened. I mean, I grew up, I started traveling myself at 36. He was still doing this. At that point, once I was an adult, it was just this another thing in the background that he did that he had to be different. Like he always had to be different. And that's actually a good connection because I walked the Camino de Santiago in, I think it was somewhere around 2010, 2011. And and I walked it all alone, and I was walking like in the middle, I was in the Meseta, and I'm like just looking around and people are tilling fields. And all of a sudden I smelled like freshly tilled soil, which reminded me of my childhood because we always had a garden, and it reminded me of my dad. And all of a sudden it just like hit me, you know, how like a smell can bring a whole memory just flying back to you. And it just hit me. And I'm like, when did I become my dad? I'm walking across Spain. Like,
yeah,
it was just such an aha moment. And then I had another few hundred miles to sit there and think about, oh my gosh, it's not just that I'm walking across Spain, but like everything I've set up to this point, leaving my corporate job, trying to be different, doing something new, going off into this whole crazy world of content creation or blogger. And I always had to be different as an adult. And it just really, all of a sudden, that moment where you're like, I have turned into my parents. And when the hell did that happen? So I think once I realized that, I approached things a little bit differently. Not that, I mean, I think I became, I should say, I started having more respect for what my dad did and who he was, because that's who I was.
Yeah. You could feel it differently then. You have a whole different appreciation for it.
Oh my God.
I mean, yeah.
It's like, oh, I get it. I get it now. And so anyway, I think I had started this now. I was admired it more. And in the back of my head, I think also, you know, he was slowing down for sure. He wasn't going to be able to finish this whole quest that he put forth that was really ambitious. My mom was getting tired of logistics. She was, you know, upper 70s. And it just kind of fizzled. And I was always really sad, mainly because he was someone who always taught us to finish what you start. Like, I hated that, but that's what he taught us. And so it kind of made me sad that he didn't finish it. But at the same time, I was so impressed that he had come up with some crazy idea that no one had ever attempted, to my knowledge, and I've researched this, no one's ever attempted or done in the future. Like, yes, there are people that have done things with capitals or visited all the capitals, but no one has tried walking from capital to capital. And I had a lot of admiration for that. As someone who's constantly trying to figure out how to see the world differently or how to stand out and be different among all this content noise, I'm like, how the hell did he do that? Like, he came up with something that no one else has done.
Super original idea, yeah.
Yeah.
And then he went and did it also. It wasn't just an idea, that he actually started it. Yeah.
He lived it for 30 years. Mm-hmm. And so my whole attitude towards the whole thing was changing. And I think I had in the back of my head that it was a shame that it was never finished. So put that on a shelf. And then came COVID. Mm-hmm. In COVID, when we couldn't travel, was really hard for me because, as you well know, like, that's my business and livelihood. I need to be on the go. And so that was really hard. And during that time, I started biking because I had this old bike that I bought off of Facebook. It was crap. And I'm just like, well, you know what? I want to get out. I need to explore. I need to feed this in me. If I can't get on a plane, I'm just going to go out and explore Denver. Okay. And I found a partner in crime, which Carly, one of our good friends.
And people listening know who Carly is, too. A lot of them do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. So she was my, as we called it, we were like COVID wives.
Yeah.
She lived a block from me. And so we quarantined kind of together and we started biking and we biked and biked and biked. And we had the worst bikes. We'd bike with our masks on and she had a big cruiser and we were like going 40 miles by the, you know, just seeing like how all the bike trails hooked up and we were learning so much about Denver and so on. The second year of COVID, we both got new bikes because we're like, well, this isn't going to work. And it was right before the bike crisis when you couldn't find a bike.
Yeah. Good timing.
Yes. So we got in there right at the right time. So I took up biking and I absolutely loved it. Once I got the right bike, I really fell for biking. It made a big difference. And so one day I was just sitting here with one of my other friends, Vicky, and we were talking. It was still kind of during COVID. And And somehow I started talking about this thing that my dad did. And she was fascinated by it because it was weird. And that's when it kind of hit me that I'm like, I could finish this now, but I could do it by bike because I don't want to walk the 9,000 miles that he has left
for the next 30 years.
Yeah. Like yeah. That didn't appeal to me, even though I like hiking, but all of a sudden this new sport that I had just taken up, that seemed like fun. And that's what did it. And so then I decided also that I would get back to my parents in South Dakota. That's where they live. Go up to the attic and pull all those binders down of notes and figure out where he was in it and see if it was even going to be possible. Do I think I could do this? And that then kind of led to this whole idea to do a docuseries about it. So that's when I brought another girlfriend who's a videographer to South Dakota. And that's finally when we sat down my parents and I started talking to them about it. So that's a very long answer for why I didn't do it. That was the first time that I asked him, though.
Yeah. And so what did he say?
It's actually in that first episode. But he said, I don't know, it was a lark. That's exactly what he said. And well, my mother rolled so her deep. Eyes. And he said, and then he kind of went on to say, I like big projects.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. that somehow resonated with me a lot.
Yep. Sure.
Because I like big projects. Mm-hmm. I've done a bunch of them in my travel career. Yeah. And then my mom started talking about in this interview, it was kind of like, you probably are too young, but like when Harry met Sally, like the two of them talking, it was very funny. But she went on to say something like, well, remember, Lee, when you had that other project where you wanted to drive every road in Nebraska? I remember that as a kid, and I hated that, too. Because he wanted to, like, take us out of the way when all I wanted to do was get to my grandparents' house. And so, anyway, he's always had a fascination with maps and big projects.
Gee, it sounds familiar. Have you ever read The Pursuit of Happiness? No, The Happiness of Pursuit. Sorry. The Happiness of Pursuit, which is by Chris Guillebeau. Chris,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
It makes me think of this because that book, and you guys out there listening, if you haven't read The Happiness of Pursuit, I said it backwards the first time. No. Yeah.
No, it's Happiness of Pursuit.
The Happiness of Pursuit.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just a little dyslexic here. Yeah, because it talks about the idea of a quest. And this is how I see this project of yours. It is a quest because a quest has a specific set of rules around it. It has a completion marker. It has a timeline. Like it's a whole thing, but it's structured. It's not just an idea. It's not just a lark of like an idea. It's this is a quest and I will know I'm finished when I walk into the last capital, you know, or whatever.
Yes.
I loved that book. And I love that you're living this right now. Like this is one of your quests.
When I started looking into doing this, I actually read that book. Other books, but I read that book to try to get my head around it a little bit of how I wanted to approach it. And yeah, it's perfect. It's perfect for something like this. And then I also kind of, as I read through it, realized that I had never labeled it really as such, but I've done a lot of these quests in my travel career. I did, I suppose you could call the Camino de Santiago, but I did the Mongol Rally where we drove the car from London to Mongolia. I did the Nice Project. That's probably my biggest one where I traveled with each of my six nieces anywhere in the world. And that actually kind of leads into one of the reasons why I started looking into this, and I needed a new quest. I needed a new purpose. I get really bored with doing the same thing over and over, and I always need something new. And my brain works best when I have something big, a big project with like these goals that I have out there. I'm driven by challenge. And, you know, I would say my dad was too. And I think those are the things that I learned. But yeah, it's it's a great book. And he actually wrote that because he was on a quest to go to every country in the world.
Yeah. Which he was on my podcast for that ages ago. Do you believe that? Chris Skillebeau. That was like episode, I don't even remember. It was before I can remember the episode numbers.
I remember meeting him like back in the early days when all of us, the few people who were doing this kind of stuff, would all meet up. And in fact, I think I went to one of his conferences once.
Cool. Good. Yeah. He's such a good writer. Anyway, shout out to Chris Skillebeau. Okay, so I'm curious, when you decided to do this bike quest, because you had a crappy bike and you upgraded your bike, did you upgrade then to the bike that you have now that you've been doing this with?
No, that first, well, the second bike, I guess, when I got the good bike.
Yeah.
And so what, the same one I use.
What is it and how it has it, like, I mean, what is it? And also what have you had, what else have you had to procure? Like what other kind of gear have you added to your, you know, inventory to make this happen?
So much. So I have a Trek Checkpoint. It's a gravel bike. And I love it. I think the big change for me is my old Facebook Marketplace bike was more of a commuter bike where you kind of were kind of more upright in a way. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, dropped handlebars. Like it just feels good when I get on it. Like my body, I feel where all my power is coming from, and it just, my back doesn't hurt, you know, like it just is comfortable weirdly. It's just a better biking position. And that was a big, big difference for me. So I've loved that bike. It's been wonderful. And then the interesting thing, and this is another reason that I don't know if this is a why I did it, but it's something that I love, kind of a love hate actually, about starting stuff like this, is this whole thing was completely new to me. Like I didn't know anything about biking. I used to be a runner. That was the main thing I did. I played softball or whatever, but I had never been a cyclist. So I knew nothing about bikes, maintenance, gear, what was out there, rules of the road. I knew nothing. And when you start a whole new hobby, there's so much to learn and it's so overwhelming. But it also at the same time, I was in tears plenty of times trying to just figure out like why they call clip-in shoes clipless or whatever. Like, I mean, right. I was just like, I don't understand.
Because that makes sense.
and just, I don't know. It was just also new, but I loved it too at the same time, because it makes, when I learn stuff, I feel alive and younger, I suppose. And this is a way to, learning new things is always a way to keep yourself young.
And what age were you when you started this?
When I actually started my first capital route, I was probably 52.
We'll come right back to that. But first, let's thank the brands that support our show. Oboz Footwear is the maker of my feet's number one favorite adventure shoe, the Sawtooth X Low. I know that footwear is as personal and particular as our own feet, but if my feet could talk, they'd scream at you to go try a pair of these on, because slipping them on is like taking my feet to a cloud massage instead of a 15-mile hike. I don't make the rules, I'm just here for the ride. Aside from comfort and performance, one of my favorite things about Oboz Footwear is their commitment to sustainability. Not only are they a certified B Corp, but every pair of footwear sold helps plant trees across the world. Check them out for yourself and find out more at obozfootwear.com/lovehiking. Osprey has been my go-to luggage for everything since 2015. My new favorite item to add to my list of trusty travel luggage is the Transporter Rolling Duffel 40 that I recently took as a carry-on all over Europe for 6 weeks on 13 flights, including a few of those budget airlines with strict rules, and it fit in the overhead bin on all of them. No lost luggage worries here. And with its high chassis, it held up beautifully on the cobblestone streets of France, dirt, rocks, ferries, and van transfers in the fjords of Norway, and even sandy surfaces on the coasts of Greece and Albania. 80% of Osprey's entire product line are certified Blue Sign products, and 100% are backed by their almighty guarantee. They will repair or replace any product for the life of the product. We are proud to support each other both on and off the podcast, and you can find out more at osprey.com. And thank you, wherever you are, for listening to the show and supporting these brands that help make it possible.
Okay. But still, I mean, I think that's inspiring because you didn't even ride a bike really until you were over 50. And here you are, like, riding your bike across the country and inspiring people and making a docuseries and also living a whole new chapter of your life.
Yeah. And I just, you know, I think, and all these things, crazy things that I do now, like, I try really hard not to overthink it. And I didn't, when I got on that bike the first time and started the first route, I didn't know much of anything at all. I just rode. And I learned as I went along. And that's pretty much how I do a lot of stuff. So like when I referenced the Camino de Santiago, I didn't know anything about it. Someone had told me about it. I showed up in Pamplona and I started walking. I didn't even know anything. I didn't know anything about it.
You know what though? Can we celebrate that for a moment and let everybody hear that? Because I think we all do this. Like we all think we have to be prepared to a certain standard that's only in our own heads probably before we're allowed to start something. Or maybe it's because we're comparing, oh, well, I've never done this before. Well, I don't know anything about it. But guess what? And everybody says this, like from day one of having this podcast, the last 11 years, this is what people say. Just go, yeah. Just do the thing, whatever it is. Like experts aren't born overnight. You have to put in the work. You have to put in the time. You have to learn.
It's how you learn. Yeah.
Yeah. So I love that you're just like, I just started walking. I just started biking. Like, excellent. Keep going.
Yeah. I mean, and I've learned so much. And that's why it's been such a journey so far. But yeah, so gear, like I had to, well, I mean, I started from nothing. So I also got a car for the first time in like 18 years during the pandemic. So I had to put a hitch on a car. I had to figure out a bike rack, which I didn't know anything about. I had to get like I didn't have to, but it made life easier with like a bike computer.
Which is, will you say what that is? That's the thing that tracks like the bike computer, the little screen.
It's a little Garmin. It's like, mm-hmm. It looks like it's half the size of a smartphone and it's easier. I like it better than a smartphone because it's more secure and I just don't want to use my smartphone. It's too big. So yeah, but it has like all my routing, information on speed, all that. And it has a whole bunch of other stuff that it does that I don't even get into because the one thing that I don't want this to be is I'm a very competitive person with myself, but I don't want this to be some like race. I used to race when I ran and I kind of got to the point where I didn't like it and it didn't make me like the sport. And I didn't want this. So I don't have any like, I don't know. They have these like power pedals and all this stuff. Like I don't have any of that stuff. I just know my speed, how many miles I have left. And that's it.
Yeah.
Really. Like I just go out there. And
I love that. I love that because this is your thing anyway.
Yeah. It's,
you know, you get to make the rules. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So other things I'm trying to think. Oh, and then when I decided that, I'm going to make this a docuseries and I'm going to put it on YouTube, it was another whole new thing to learn. I'm like, I don't know anything about YouTube. It would be like if I tried to start a podcast. I don't know anything about it.
Neither did I when I started. I just got a mic and started talking.
So then I had to figure out how am I going to record this? How am I going to get footage? It's just me. Well, and someone who we haven't talked about yet, a logistics queen.
Mm-hmm.
But so I've had to like come up with a whole solution for how I can record the journeys and get footage that's worthy of at least trying to put together a decent documentary. So there's been a lot of gear associated with that and learning, trying to think of other gear, just even like learning what bicycle kit was and why do I need it and why do I care? Like, you know, just, and why is it so damn tight? Like, I'll never forget ordering my first bike jersey. And I'm like, well, this is ridiculous. This doesn't need to be this tight.
It's aerodynamic that way.
Yeah. It, you know, so it just, everything was new.
Mm-hmm. Did you take a class at all on like just quick fixes on, you know, tires, chain stuff? Yeah,
I did. I did enroll myself in a class. And I also, one of our mutual friends, Eric, also kind of gave us a little class a few times. But what I find is that I'm not really, it's good. I'm glad I did it. And I have an idea and I knew what kind of like tools I needed and stuff like that. But until you're actually forced to do it
like yeah.
yourself in a situation where you break down on the road, it doesn't really like, I don't know, sink in to me until then.
Sure. And have you had to?
Not on the road. I've had a situation before where we were getting ready to go out from the hotel that day and my tire was flat. So then I had to change the tube like in the hotel room. So I haven't had kind of like a emergency of that. And then I just on one of my recent routes this year was the first time I ever flew with my bike, which was a whole nother learning experience, which also caused some tears. So Eric taught me how to take apart my bike completely and put it in, you know, for storage and put it in checked luggage and all that stuff. And then put it back together when I got there. That was crazy. So yeah, little by little, I learn. Otherwise, for all the ones prior to that, I was just putting it on my car and biking to where I had to start.
How empowered do you feel, though?
Yeah, really empowered, I suppose. Like, it's interesting. More so the first few times I did it. Now I'm kind of like, I've done 10 routes now. I just finished my 10th one. And now it's like I kind of have it dialed in. There are still pain points and things that I wish I knew or whatever. But it's not probably as empowering as it was those first times. But it's still so cool. One of my favorite things, and this is weird, is, you know, I can ride the whole route, 450 miles or whatever, over the course of 8 days. And then, you know, I finish at the Capitol and then we have to put the bike on and then we drive back to wherever. And when I drive back, oftentimes I'm driving past everything that I just biked past for 8 days or whatever. And that's always really empowering or amazing. And it's like, holy crap, I biked all of it. It's like, it doesn't even seem real sometimes. And it's just me out there. Like, so, yeah.
I think that it's important to remind yourself how far you've come. I mean, because it's easy to get used to your new muscles.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, I mean, literally, if you're lifting weights, those weights get lighter as you get stronger. And so this whole bike thing used to be intimidating and scary and new. And now you're so used to it that you don't even recognize that you're lifting up those weights every day.
You're right.
You've come really, really far. I mean, it just reminds me of when I got my truck camper. And one of my biggest fears was that like something would break on or something would go wrong and I'm alone, right? I've got to like fix it by myself. And now years in, I've had it for a couple of years now. And it's just like, I mean, I'll go out there and I'll you know, pop it up to dry it out after whatever. And I'm like doing the buckles and adjusting things. And I'm like looking at myself. Sometimes I just stop. I'm like, wow, look at how easy this is for me now. When, I mean, someone had to show me how to do every single step of this when I first got it, you know?
Yeah.
And look at you, like you're 10 rides in and you're like a pro on the bike now.
Oh, I still don't feel like a pro on the bike, honestly.
But you've got thousands of hours out there too. You know what I mean?
I actually added up in the 10 routes, I've gone 3,500 miles in the 10 routes. And that doesn't even come close to all the training and stuff that I do to get ready for them. So yeah, it is. It's weird. And I think like, I started my first two routes in South Dakota and North Dakota. And I grew up in the Midwest. I understand the Midwest. I understand farms and farm roads. And so it wasn't, I felt like I was in a landscape and a culture that I understood when I was biking through it, which was probably good. But now since I've ventured out into like, I did Phoenix to Santa Fe. I did Tallahassee to Atlanta this year. Like you get into these different parts of the U.S. and everything is weirdly different. And that's always kind of a learning process for me. It's just, I don't know. It's hard. I still remember the first time when I had to ride on a road without a shoulder, and it was busy. It was a busy, busy road, but I had no choice. I was so scared, I about stopped the whole thing then.
Yeah, wow.
Because those first two ruts I did in North and South Dakota, I never had to be in that situation because I could ride these back farm roads that were gravel. I had my gravel bike. You know, there's just not that much traffic out there. And I had alternatives because you have endless farm roads. But once you get into the desert, and I did the Phoenix to Santa Fe, that was the time where I about just quit the whole thing and said, I can't do this. This is crazy. Like, I'm going to get hit. And I've come a long way since then. Now I've ridden on interstates. I've ridden horrible, horrible places. But I'm used to it a little bit now, and I know that I can do it. I mean, I still know absolutely that every time I go out on my bike on one of these, that there is a chance that I am going to get hit, injured, die, whatever. Like, and I'm at peace with that. But it is a very hard thing to kind of come to grips with. But I am at peace with it. Like, yeah. I'm still doing it.
It makes me want to ask you, even though I feel like we've kind of touched on it, but like, what are your fears of, what are your biggest fears of doing this? And did you have them before? Have they changed? And also, how often have you actually been faced with those? Like, have those experiences ever come to pass? You know, like, what was it that made you nervous at the beginning? And yeah.
The two fears that really come to mind were, yeah, cycling on busy roads. I mean, we all know, y'all have heard stories of bicyclists that have been fatally hit. And practically every cyclist now that I know, because I know a few more, have had some kind of accident with cars or whatever. So it's very possible. And I knew that going in. And that does scare me a lot. But I, like I said, it's more of I've just kind of gotten used to it. I try to pick the routes really well. If it's just too dangerous, I'll get off and we'll try to regroup and come up with a different route or go at a different time when it's not as busy or whatever, if I'm really feeling in jeopardy. Yeah, I've had like minor like panic attacks on the bike before when it was too busy and, you know, cars are just flying by me. Yeah, so that's been an interesting one, but I always knew that that was one of the big, big fears. The other one is really weird. The best way I can put it is my father had my mother to be his logistics person. And I had no one. I'm not married. I don't have kids. My fear was, how am I ever going to find someone to help me? Because I don't want to do this completely on my own. Like, there were too many other things that were scaring me about it, like my safety. I didn't really want to bike pack everything. That wasn't what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And so I was at a loss for, like, how am I going to find people to be my support vehicle in person? And how is that going to work? And that I was terrified about. And that's one that weirdly has not come to fruition at all. I've had plenty of people help, like, and we call them the logistics queen. And they have a hugely, this is teamwork. Like, I make it to the Capitol, they make it to the Capitol. We do it together without a doubt. And I love that. And that's been really fun. And, you know, sometimes it's been friends that could somehow take off 2 weeks and be flexible. Cause that's the other thing is, you know, you don't know when things don't go as planned, the weather, the route, the whatever, maybe I get injured. So when I say, you know, I need someone to be with me for 8 days, it's really kind of like 8 days plus give or take four. Mm-hmm. Cause you don't really know. So I've found people to come with me, some friends. But really one of the most surprising things is I've also had people who have followed me, my blog, for years, like step up and offer to be a logistics queen. And I don't even know them, really. I mean, like, I barely know them.
ChatGPT can't do that.
No. And but they followed the first few and they want to help and want to be there. And I meet with them and kind of go over like, well, this is what's required. And, you know, this is what I provide and so on. And they do it. And every one of them so far has worked out. It's been crazy.
How many times have you done that?
Two complete, like, strangers, I'm going to say.
Okay.
And then the others, I knew, some of them I sort of knew, but we had never traveled together like that. So, you know, it's intense. It's really intense.
Wow.
And with the queen, I mean, they're all about safety and being there for me and dealing with the car and all the stuff and the hotels and the, you know, it's just, it's a lot. Every queen that I've had has said, I thought that I would have more time to just like hang out and wait for you and read a book. And no one does. They say it's because I'm too fast, but I don't think that's it at all. It's not. I know it's not. It's just, it's a lot. I mean, I've traveled solo for such a long time. That was the other reason why I didn't want to just do this myself. Like, I wanted to have the joy of having someone with me, which is a lot of fun. And so far, it's worked out really, really great.
Oh, this is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
How many do you have left to do?
I started with 26, so I have 16 left. But that 16 is probably somewhere around 6,000 or so miles.
Okay. And mostly in the West, right?
Yeah. Like
the
that's why.
Mm-hmm. Miles. Yeah.
I have my dad. He did a lot in the Midwest because that's where we were from. He did a lot in the East. They're close or they're, you know, shorter and he could get them done. And then he did quite a few, thank God, in the South. Just, I don't know why. I think they just went down there in the winter. I have no idea why he did those. But, yeah, so I have all of the West left. I'm slowly starting to get over to the West Coast, but I haven't reached the West Coast yet.
At least you have the non-humid states kind of left.
Yeah. And the South, you know, the South poses its own issues. Like, one of the hardest ones that I did was the one where Carly was my logistics queen. And that was Austin, Texas to Little Rock, Arkansas, and Eastern Texas, man. Oh, Texas was, I'm so glad. My dad already walked into Texas. He walked Oklahoma City to Austin, and I'm so glad Texas is over. Like, and I hard. Got out of there alive. It was one of the hardest, for sure. It was the one where, like, everyone who watches my stories, because I do live stories all the time on it, were like, we just wanted to, like, make sure you were alive every day. I'm like, yeah, I did too. It was just hard. It was the traffic was endless, so much traffic and so fast, and the road, like, no shoulders. So it just put me out in harm's way at all times, and it sucked. And then the other big thing was, which is really, really sad to me because I'm an animal lover.
Yes.
They just don't treat their animals well. And so I was chased by so many dogs. Not only was I scared for my own safety in those situations, I mean, terrified. I'm terrified of dogs chasing me. But I was really scared of these dogs that were just not taken care of, clearly. And they would come out running across like two lanes of traffic barking at me. And I'm like, these dogs, it's going to get killed.
And you're like, I'm going to watch this right now happen. Yeah.
And I'm going to be kind of the reason in a way. But it was... Every time you'd go past a house, I would just be tense, just waiting for the dogs to come out running. And yeah, that part's been really weird. I didn't think about the dogs. You talk about fears. That was one that I didn't think about when before I started this. But now since I'm in it, it is definitely one of my huge fears. And I talk about it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So hopefully the West treats you a little better.
It is interesting because I learn a lot about a state or the state's people, I guess, by how well they take care of their animals. That was one thing. I just did Idaho or part of Idaho. And only once or twice did I have some dogs run out. And that was just, it was kind of awkward. It was weird. It wasn't that they were stray necessarily or anything like that or treated badly. Idaho took care of their dogs. I was really, really impressed.
That's good. That's great. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Nice. Good for the bikers to have the dogs taken care of.
And you also figure out who are the good states that pay more attention to bikers, who are the good states that have better roads that are better taken care of? Like, it's really kind of fascinating what you learn.
Sure, yeah.
You're not a bike that long.
Wow. You're really getting a backdoor tour of this country by doing this.
Yeah, which is the other really fascinating thing, right? Like, you and I, we spend a lot of time international travel.
Yep.
And I feel like now I'm in this stage where I'm really trying to see my own country. And it's an interesting time to do so. You learn a lot going only 50 miles a day on a bike. This is mainly a journey, even though I'm going to, you know, capital cities, this is mainly a journey through rural America.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. I mean, that's where I spend all my time in between. And it's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, to say the least.
You know, even though I said like Texas was hard, East Texas was so hard, at the same time, I also felt like I understood things better in Texas after riding through it. I could see how people lived. I talked to people. You see the conditions. You see, it's just, I don't know, you learn more. I always say one of my big mottos is proximity brings understanding.
Yeah.
And just by, you know, it's really easy to watch the news and see someone in another state that might not have your same values or whatever and think that they're all crazy or whatever. But when you're that close to things for that long and you're going at that speed, you're doing that really slow travel.
Yeah.
You know, just the proximity, me watching everything go by, brings understanding about our own states and people in the states. And that I'm happy about. Like,
yeah,
it's important, I think.
Absolutely. That's one of the biggest things that I believe about travel in general. Mm-hmm. I mean, for example, you go and you travel through Thailand and then you hear about a tsunami and then you're like, wait a second. I know those people. I've met them. Are they okay? Like, I've seen their homes. You know, like, it becomes part of your personal story when you go to that place and make it and kind of accept it into your, you know, existence. It's like lighting up the map, like where it used to be dark. It's now part of your story.
Yeah. It brings you an understanding that you never, that you have control over. I mean, the news feeds us only so much and it has control over what it feeds you. And this way you can form your own thoughts.
Yeah. I love that.
And that's really important. That's one of the beautiful things about travel in general.
Yeah, absolutely. Preach. So in kind of closing, looking back at this, and I know you still have several more that you need to do. So anybody out there listening who lives in the West who maybe wants to help Sherry knows where to find her.
Yes, I need Queens. I've got a big chunk of the West. I've got a big chunk of the Northeast. Those are my two really big areas and some stuff through like North South Carolina yet.
What are the biggest lessons you've learned? Like, what are your biggest takeaways from doing this experience, this quest?
Well, we're all stronger than what we initially think. I think every time I finish one of these, it builds confidence. And I think that's always important to be reminded of, always. We can do more than we ever think we could.
Yeah.
I think my other lesson is that I'm not alone.
Mm.
And there are people out there, whether I hear regularly from them or not, or, you know, whatever, that want to help and want to be involved. And I always think that's a really good reminder. As someone who's been single my whole life, you know, that's a hard one to believe in at times.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially because also, like, I've been nomadic for so long. It's really hard to have roots anywhere, which just exacerbate the whole thing.
Yeah.
I'm not alone. That's gone way better than I thought. Which makes me really happy.
You nailed that. I mean, we're stronger than we think we are, and we're not alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those are the really great things. And I think, you know, you just have to, I'll always be a believer in pushing yourself, challenging yourself, growing, doing new things.
Yeah.
And that's what this is for me. And those are the things that I kind of always learn over and over and how important those things are to me. I also think, you know, it's okay to become your parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I also think there's one more thing to be said about this in the not overthinking, going back to kind of your, you know, you just kind of started it. You had a lot of fears. You were worried about being alone, but it turns out that that wasn't an issue, or it hasn't been yet. And look how strong you are now. However, there's another thing here that I just want to kind of say out loud is that you are the only person who could have made this quest happen. This is Sherry's deal. This is your thing. And even though you have the support, you have to dig inside and find that courage and do that thing because this is your idea, you know? I mean, Maybe it started with your dad, but this, you are the engine here. You're the one propelling this forward. And this also applies to all of us. Like when we have these big ideas, these big quests, these things that we want to do, it's great that we have support. It's great that we're going to find that, you know, confidence once we do the thing. And it's okay that we have fears because, you know, of course we're going to have fears. Fear is involved in all of the unknown, everything that we do that's new. But taking that first step, actually doing the thing, that's from within. That's all us. And so I just want to acknowledge you for that, that you're doing it. You're doing the thing and it's really impressive and you're setting a really cool example, really, really inspiring example.
Thank you. And it's not, yeah, I'm just a normal person with all the normal fears and I push myself, but, you know, I'm just like anyone else out there who wants to try something new.
Right.
I have to push through it myself. Like I said, There's been lots of tears in this whole thing too, and self-doubt and about quitting and all of that stuff. So.
And it's expensive. It's not like anyone else is paying for this. You're doing this yourself.
That's right. This is my little project.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And it is very expensive. But I feel for some reason, I feel like it's worth it still. And so the queens, when I have a logistics queen come along, I pay for everything. So I pay for the hotel. I pay for all the food, the drink during the trip, the gas, obviously. So like I want to make it as easy as I can for them. And it is my project.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you're doing it.
Yeah.
And you're learning so much and you're courageous and you're confident and you're empowered and you're making it work.
And I'm a cyclist now.
You're a cyclist now. Oh, mic drop. I love it. All right. Well, with that, we're going to close for today. But thank you so much for sharing this story. And you're super inspiring. We'll make sure to share all the links. We'll put the link to your videos, your docuseries in the show notes. And
yeah.
Yes.
And if anyone ever does want to come join me, you're more than welcome to ride with me. When I did Santa Fe to Denver, I had a bunch of friends come. I had someone join me once in Iowa. It was really great. So yeah, if you're interested in being involved in any way, just drop me a line. Let me know. I try to do about three to four a year in between all the other stuff I have going on. I just appreciate it if anyone follows along.
OtsWorld at OtsWorld and OtsWorld.com.
Yeah. And this is, I've termed this capital to capital.
Capital to capital.
And I'm going to say thank you so much for having me on, for letting me share these stories through all these years. Like, I can't thank you enough. You've got such a great channel and voice here. And I just feel honored to be a part of it and multiple times.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's an honor to have you here. So the feeling's entirely mutual. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. Thanks.